So welcome. I want to introduce Miranda Steinwand, my co-speaker today. Give her a round of applause, can't we? She has three youngsters, so having her time and getting her up on stage is quite a treat. So thank you very much for coming.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, everyone take a deep breath. And why don't we drop into this thing? You want to take it away?
Absolutely. So, I am Miranda. I am 33 years old. I have three little boys, two of which are identical twins, 3 years old. I've been married to my favorite human for just over 8 years. I went to Bible college for 5. I did not meet my husband at Bible college. I know that's a thing. I was a pastor. Some might call me an Enneagram enthusiast. I'm currently a spiritual director. And recently, I realized that God does not exist for me anymore. God has died. I remember the moment where this shift began to take root. I was sitting in my living room, crocheting. I crochet booties. And I was listening to my podcast, and the next series that came up was a series by Rob Bell and Pete Rollins. The series was called Pete Rollins on God, Part 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I listened to all four of them, and they're intense. But I probably only heard the first 2 to 4 minutes of Part 1. What Pete Rollins said, it latched onto me. And I had no idea that the impact it would have. Like some of you, I grew up in a broken home, a deeply fractured home. And when I got a bit older, I started to realize that the trauma and the pain that I felt from my family wasn't because they had split up, but because I was living with two deeply hurt people. And our life played that out. I grew up with this, or because of this hurt, I grew up in neglect and addiction, abandonment and selfishness. I grew up with this perception that I was this invisible girl, that my feelings were not only not important, but not seen. I grew up believing that I was actually not really worthy of being truly loved or truly known. And all of that lived inside of me, and it broke me. That was until I met him, God. I remember that moment. You don't forget it. It was the first time where I felt like someone or something was bigger than me and stronger and more capable, someone that was important and special, saw this invisible girl, saw me. It was this first time that I had found this resting place where my guard was kind of let down. It was the first time I actually considered maybe this terribly unloving person or unlovable person such as myself was maybe not so unlovable. My heart had found a friend, a protector. It had found a home in the heart of the God that I met that day. And there it would remain, only with him. Our relationship from that moment, 20-plus years, would be what I would describe as intimate, personal, a partnership. It was honest and raw. It was messy, and it was beautiful. I did life with God, all of it. So one night, feeling the weight in my chest, I decided to go out onto the deck, and I sat down in the chair, and I intentionally placed my feet flat onto the ground, placing my hand or my heart over my heart, drawing in this warm summer air, I finally realized what my body and my heart had known for a while. And I looked out to what felt like nothingness. You're gone. It felt shocking. It was like, I didn't know this was happening. I don't remember asking for this. I didn't want you to leave. I would have never asked for this. But the truth was, I had experienced some pretty deep aha moments leading up to that particular moment on the deck. And I could no longer ignore them. That moment on the deck was just the first time I realized that I had made God up. That particular image of God that I had, I made it up. See, God was how I coped and survived my world. See, that hurting little girl that met God all those years back, she didn't actually go anywhere. She remained in me, untouched, unmoved, unhealed. And I used my God character in order to protect her so that she would never have to experience all that, let's call it what it is, shit, again. So when God was introduced to me, I latched onto it. I needed a voice, and God gave me one. And it was really great. It was absolutely what I needed. And I don't think I would change how it played out. But here's my truth. It's not working for me anymore. It's not cutting it. I can no longer sit on the sidelines of my life. I want in. All of me. And the only way that I can do that is by letting go of all those beautiful, yet no longer helpful, and very limiting beliefs I had about God. I was, or I am, letting go of the things that I not only just believed, but that I lived and breathed. Those beliefs just weren't these ideas in my head. They were a part of who I was, who I am. And if I'm honest, I don't always feel like I'm letting go because I want to, but because I really need to. I'm sure you probably realize that this isn't new. But I'm not the first one to experience losing the death of a belief. And I'm guessing that maybe some of the reason that some of you are feeling a little bit of my tension, my struggle with this loss, is because you've experienced this too. Maybe you're experiencing this right now, and it's fresh, like mine. Or maybe you've experienced it a while ago, and the sting isn't quite as immediate. Or maybe you're just starting to feel that stirring, that restlessness within you, and you haven't quite figured out what it is. I just want you to enter a little bit deeper into your story here. Do you remember what it felt like in those moments when you realized what that tension inside your chest was? When a belief that you felt so strongly about at one point was just, that was no longer working for you? Do you remember how that felt? Do you remember how you reacted? Were you like me? Grieving what it once was, what it actually is? It was so real. How could it not be? Or maybe you felt shame around this loss. Like maybe you didn't have enough faith, or that you were no longer a Christian, or at least not a good one. Because let's be honest here, We praise certainty. We have this certain attachment to standing firm in our beliefs. Or maybe you are like one of my good friends who had said that he had never felt so at peace, so at home, such freedom than he did the moment of and the moment after he had let go of this God character that he had. God was no longer real for him. Today's message isn't about that time Miranda lost her belief in God. I just so happen to have the mic. Today isn't just about me. It's kind of about all of us, isn't it? And I can't help but wonder if you're coming to Friends Church and if your face is looking back at mine right now, that maybe you've experienced a few doubts, a couple of losses along the way. Today's message is about this. It's about loss of belief, doubt, uncertainty. But we're not going to leave you just there. Well, actually, we are. But we'll help you see why maybe we think that this place is actually a really important place in our spiritual journey.
We don't talk a whole lot about loss of belief, and loss of faith and atheism at church, do we? This is the place where you're supposed to believe all the right things and feel certain about everything you believe. And if you don't, then certainly someone on stage is going to really feel it confidently, right? So you can kind of, if you're not, at least you're not feeling it, at least he's feeling it. That'll take me through another week. But you know, we're not the only people to go through this. And let me even say it a bit more pointedly. You're not the only person who's experienced this. This is a deep part of our tradition. The Christian tradition talks about this regularly through the texts that our spiritual ancestors left for us. There's a story that happens about 3 days after the murder of Jesus. And I think God had just died for 2 students of Jesus. You see, they were pretty close to Jesus. They were the closest 12. And after what had gone down in the life of Jesus, the murder and everything, they were just out of town. They were running away. They were like, I'm out of here. But on the road to Emmaus, which is where they're going, they run into a stranger. And I don't know why, but they strike up a conversation. The guy says, what do you guys... You seem all freaked out. What are you freaked out about? And you didn't hear what just happened? They killed this guy named Jesus. But I don't want you to hear in the post, 21st century view of your theology and all that stuff. I want you to look through their lens. These are first century Jews who are living in a world ruled by Romans. And not nicely. They are getting their butts handed to them. It's a crazy time for them. And so when the stranger says, what's going on? This is what they say. We had our hopes up that Jesus was the one about to deliver Israel from the Roman occupation. You see, their model of God said God was going to use Jesus to save us from the Romans. Their hopes were pinned on it. Everything was pinned on it. Their entire lives were pinned on it. And so when Jesus is dead, he's murdered, everything dies. All their hope dies. This idea of God as Savior, it's dead. Can you feel that? What a horrible place for that to be. And so they're walking down the road just to get out of town, feeling that. God's dead. Just like Miranda said, for her it was God as protector. God is the person who's not going to make me deal with all the pain from my childhood. Some of us, it's not even God. It's a view of the Bible. Bible is literal words of God. Some of us, it's God is judge. Some of us, it's not even to do with God. It's hell dies or heaven dies or the sense of good things happen to good people and we're good people, so... But things haven't gone well. And so that belief dies. I don't know what your story is. I don't know the anxiety you feel in your chest right now. But some of us, there's something that doesn't feel quite right. I think for those students, God as Savior died. But here's the thing. They didn't say that their God had died for them, right? They weren't open about what they were feeling, were they? No, it was that, you know, you tell a story through history, not through your heart. Let me tell you the facts about Jesus. Not, I am dying. That's where it starts. It starts with questions, it starts with doubts, it starts with tension between what we believe and what we see and trying to reconcile them. And we're pretty sure that this is not the place for that kind of crap, right? Doubts don't happen here. You don't go to church to say, I think I'm an atheist. I was a theist for most of my life, but something's dying inside of me. I don't know what to do with it. And I think I don't believe anymore. This isn't where you go for that, is it? So we hide it. We feel ashamed of it. We try and push through it. If I just believe harder, it's going to go away. We're here today to ask you to do something different. We're here today to ask you to be open about that. Not so we can change it. Not so we can shame you. No, that's not it at all. Because when you're open about it, then you can feel through it. When you're open about it and you find a safe place where you can talk about it, you can talk with somebody. That's why we have pub nights tonight at 4. People come in and, you know, as the people start to go out, someone will sit me down and be like, Vince, yeah, I think I'm an atheist. My response is usually, good for you. Because we think it's a profound step in our spiritual journeys. Everything we've been taught says, you cannot do this. This is bad. You have to believe and only believe, and that's all that you got. We actually think it's healthier for your spirituality when you need to let it go, to let it go. Some of you, it might be God altogether. Some of you, it's this little thing you grew up with, this little piece. That needs to die. Richard Kearney calls this process anatheism.
So, anatheism is this space, this journey in between the loss of God or belief and the return to it or the choice not to return to it. But it's not a return to what it used to be. When you return, it's new. You're looking through this different lens with this different perspective. But while you're out in this, we're in this anatheistic process. While you're out on this journey in this space in between, there's kind of this hope that there is. By letting go of things, that there's a space created within you where maybe something new can form and grow. Now, on a personal level, I have found this anatheistic space to be very formless, wordless, and bottomless, with no real solid ground to rest my feet. Some days I feel the anxiety of it creep up. And then some days I kind of experience it as this sacred space where a great deal of vulnerability is required of me to stay there and a lot of courage so that I don't run away.
I think I've been on the anatheistic spiral most of my life. Anyone resonate with that one? I look at people who have, I don't even know how it works for them, but they have a belief, they grew up with that belief, it's never changed their whole life. I think I'm a bit envious. Some days it'd be so nice to just unring that bell, wouldn't it? A few years ago, actually no, as I sit here looking around the crowd, I realized this started really young in my life. Prayer had to die for me. The prayer that said, if someone in my life is sick, I can pray for them and they'll get better. Because I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and other people prayed and prayed and prayed, and it didn't happen. For a while, I just tried to believe harder and pray harder, and but it was killing my spirituality. So I remember letting it go. And for years, you guys will, again, at the end of pub night when everyone's gone, Vince, can I ask you a question? Sure. Why don't you pray at the end? Jeff prays. You don't pray at the end of your messages. It's like you're doing it wrong, buddy. Prayer didn't work for me. I was reading a book on how our brains work. I remember reading through it and getting to the section that said the thing that we call spiritual experience is actually a portion of your brain firing. You know, like you have a language portion, you have a visual sight portion, you have a higher reasoning portion. You have, for lack of a better term, a spiritual experience portion of your brain. And just like any part of your brain, if you use it a lot, it works really good. If you don't use it a whole lot, it kind of just atrophies. The brain's like, we got other things to use with that real estate, so we're just going to kind of shove you out, we're going to take it over, and you're going to be able to be really logical. Any really logical person out there like me who maybe took most of that real estate. Yeah. Jeez. But I'm starting to realize that there's this portion of my brain that if I'm open to it and I use it, I feel a connection to something more again. I feel a sense of wanting to communicate with something more. And without even realizing it, I wasn't looking for it. All of a sudden I was going, prayer's back. Holy crap. I could pray again. But you notice? It looks nothing like what I did before. You notice Jesus' students, I think, and this is my thoughts, you can disagree with me. I think the author told this story. The guy we call Luke told this story to talk about anatheism. Here these guys have this belief God is Savior, and God didn't save. What do we do with this? And so I think they swung into disbelief. And they're sitting there talking to the stranger, explaining this stuff. They spent the whole day with him. I don't know, this guy's super charming or something like that. How many spend an entire day with a stranger that you meet on the road, right? That's a little bit weird. But they're hanging out the whole day with him. And it says the most crazy thing. It says, at near the end of the day, this is what they said. Their eyes were opened and they recognized the stranger as Jesus. I don't think this is, you know, we forgot what he looked like in the last 3 days. Oh, Jesus. Didn't recognize you the facial hair. Good to see you, buddy. High five, right? I don't think that's what it was. And I don't actually think it was a face-changing miracle. Some people think that's what it is. I'm fair with that. I think they saw the Spirit of Jesus in a way that they'd never even conceived of before. Because Jesus was God as Savior, right? That's what they're looking for. And also over here, Jesus shows up and they're like, whoa, what? So prayer did for me. I was looking for prayer over here and all of a sudden, wait. That's the process of anatheism. There's belief. For whatever reason, there's non-belief. And it can be anything. The big one's God. It can be the little ones. I don't think that verse means what it means. I don't think I believed it meant that. Now I don't think it means that anymore. Belief, non-belief. And then the stranger shows up. Because the new belief looks nothing like the old, right? You're expecting this. Jesus, God is Savior. Bam. It's going to be awesome. Romans out the door. Boo. The stranger shows up. For me, it was in a book on neurochemistry and how our brains work. Suddenly I'm like, prayer. Prayer? The stranger comes. And then there's a belief in something completely new. So why are we talking about anatheism? More importantly, why are we sharing the really darkest part of our spiritual journeys with you guys today? This is church. We're supposed to rev you up and make you feel good, right? Crappy day out there. We're going to make you feel better. We're telling you because chances are if you're anything like this, you're either going through this, you have gone through this, or you will go through this. The loss of belief, the questioning of belief, the doubts, the anxiety in your chest where you're not even willing to go there yet, but there's just something in here that doesn't feel right. The constant try to, I have to believe, I have to believe, I have to believe, because if I let it go for a second, I'm going to be off the rails. Chances are you've been there. Chances are you are there. I'm always there in parts of my life. We want you guys to know that this is a safe place for you to do that part of your journey. If you don't believe me, my email is vince@friendchurch.ca. We call them shock and awe emails where you're going to send me the deepest, darkest secret. Vince, I don't believe in this. And I'm going to go, good for you. I'm looking forward to hearing your story. And then if it happens, if you're open to it, just like you said, if you have a choice, when you meet the stranger, that new belief that comes out of nowhere that you weren't even expecting, I want you to email me that one too. And I'll share that moment of growth with you. I believe this. I went through the valley of the shadow of death. I met a stranger. And now I'm over here. Jesus. My God, why have you forsaken me? Disbelief. This is a normal part of our spiritual journey, and you're safe to experience it all here.
So, I'm kind of in the middle. So this stranger is a beautiful concept. I quite love it, but my conclusion is a little bit different and also similar. Upon thinking about this anatheism, I kind of came up to this poem, The Odyssey. But in full disclosure, I actually didn't come up with it. Richard Rohr did, because Richard Rohr comes up with everything. But here are my thoughts on this story. So The Odyssey is originally a poem written by the Greek poet Homer. And it's actually this story you have probably seen played out over and over and over again. If you've watched a Disney movie, you've seen it. I dare you to watch Moana and not cry. Dare you. It's a story about a hero who feels kind of restless and unsettled with who they are or what's expected of them. Whatever it is, something's not sitting right in them. So they decide to leave home. All that they know and everything that they are is wrapped up in home. But they leave. And they leave with this particular idea of what maybe this journey will look like. Maybe it's something they have to find or discover, fight. So they head off into the wilderness, the unknown, beyond the ridge, past the place that they're familiar with. But oftentimes, what they originally set out to do is not what they actually discover. Oftentimes, while on the journey, they discover a bigger truth about themselves. Maybe courage. Maybe they discover who they really are, or maybe who they really aren't. Some sort of new life is birthed within them while they're out in this journey. And then they go back home. But they're not the same person when they go back home. They saw home with this new perspective, they looked out this new lens. New life flowed through them and out of them. They were transformed. And they transformed their world or their home around them. And that transformation would have never taken place had they not taken the risk to leave home first. I hope you know where I'm going with this, because I'm not going to repeat it all. I can't help but to hope that this isn't just a tale for the heroes, a story about someone else, that maybe this is our story too, that maybe this is what the spiritual journey is to look like. And it always starts with the risk to enter into and explore doubt, uncertainty, disbelief, loss, creating this space for something new to grow and breathe life back into us. That's all I have for you. That's as far as I've gone. So if today's message was for you, may you find courage facing your disbelief, and may you know that you, all of you, with all of that, has space here in Friends Church. I send you with love and peace into your week. Have a good one, guys.